and a Jack in the Box on the other. There was a drive-in movie theater that Ozzie and Clark had watched from a distance. There were a few motels and some houses, but the building that interested Ozzie most was Otter Rock High School. He had watched children coming in and out and marveled at how many people his age existed in the world. He'd seen long yellow buses picking kids up from the side of the road and dropping them off at the school, and also observed those same buses shuttling kids home when the day was done. "Who drives those things?" Ozzie asked Clark.
"Someone important, I bet."
Ozzie thought about his parents, his life, and his surroundings, but most of all, he thought about school. It seemed like a breeding ground of possibility and acceptance. "I mean, shouldn't I be going?" Ozzie said. "I could hike to the road every morning. The closest is Mule Pole Highway. It's only 2 miles away." Ozzie pointed to the map on the table. "I'll stand next to the road and wait for the bus. When it picks me up, I'll ride it into town and then see what happens when I get to school."
"It does seem like a lot of kids your height or shorter stream into that place."
"I think I have to do this. Don't get me wrong, I love hanging out with you, but if I'm ever going to find my parents, I need to understand the world better."
"You really just want to see if Siggy's there, don't you?"
"Yes."
"So take the bus. Do you think they allow birds?"
"Probably not." Ozzie set his pencil down on the map and sat down. "Hey, Clark, do you remember those movies we watched?"
"At the drive-in?" the bird asked.
Ozzie nodded. "I know we couldn't hear what they were saying, but everyone looked so..."
"Large and two-dimensional?"
Clark guessed.
"No, they looked cleaned up."
"Oh, right," Clark said.
"And you're not the cleaned-up type. It might help if you took the leaves out of your hair and didn't wear your mom's shirts."
Ozzie pulled a leaf from his hair and looked down at the t-shirt he was wearing, which was light purple and covered with a dozen butterflies in flight. "I read a book once where a fairy changed a young woman from a poor, uneducated person to a dressed-up one," Ozzie said.
"Well then, let's do the same to you," Clark suggested. "Your dad's clothes will fit you better now, you're so tall. And you can cut your hair and wash your teeth and put on some shoes. Go get the scissors so you can chop off your hair."
"You think that's a good first step?" Clark nodded his tiny bird head. Ozzie went to get the scissors and, without his parents around to tell him differently, ran back to the kitchen with them. It wasn't quite the magical night that Cinderella experienced. No one turned a vegetable into a vehicle or rodents into horses, but Ozzie did take off several inches of hair and the butterfly shirt and put on shoes for the first time in years. There was excitement in the air. The cloaked house felt warm, like an oven cooking something wonderful. Tomorrow was the first day of school. It was actually the 1st of March, so it wasn't everyone's first day, but it was for Ozzie, and because of that, he could hardly sleep. Chapter 8. Now what a perfect world this would be. Charles Plankdorf stroked his beard as he sat behind his mahogany desk at Harkin Corp. He was attempting to control his breathing. Attempting. The project he cared about most was on the brink of falling apart. The science team were still not producing. The latest test results had come back, and they weren't good. After so many years of bitter disappointment, he was sick of it. Charles wasn't accustomed to losing. His father had taught him many hard lessons about the importance of finishing what he began. The intercom on his phone buzzed. He pressed a button and shouted at the phone.
"What is it?"
a bored voice said.
"Eric's here to see you, sir."
Charles's breathing exercises collapsed and, red-faced, he yelled,
"Send him in!"
Eric entered the office and approached the desk.
I'm sorry to bother you, Eric apologized, but as you know, the results are still negative. The board is recommending that we no longer pursue this course. They want...
No longer pursue?
Charles shouted.
Throw away years and years of work on an idea that could give us all unlimited power? The board are cowards!
Nonetheless, it's a failure. I've been sent to tell you that we...
Charles slammed his fists down, making both the desk and Eric shake.
Tell the board I need more time. I will make this work. I'll put everything I have into it. We're close, I know it. Remind them that once we have a working formula, we'll have the ability to stop all hunger, anger, and misguided will. We'll be bathing in money and we'll change the course of mankind.
They're aware of your goals, Eric said. They need you to stop.
Charles gave Eric a look that indicated the conversation was over. Eric had grown to hate Harkin Corporation. The things they had done and were doing strangled his soul. The place was destroying him, and Charles was the worst part of it.
Go! Just go!
Charles insisted. Eric was happy to oblige. Chapter 9. Stop the Bus. Ozzy stood on the side of the highway looking like a tourist who was not only lost, but in no condition to be out of bed. He'd woken up early and hiked more than 2 miles, arriving at the Mule Pole Highway a little after dawn. His chopped black hair was slicked back and combed into a style Clark swore he'd seen before. He wore one of his father's dress shirts, blue paisley with pearl buttons. His pants were a shade of purple that older folks might have found trendy when disco was popular, but that anyone under 50 would find embarrassing. The dress shoes he had chosen pinched his toes, making it hard not to wince any time he took a step. Ozzy didn't know what he might need at school, so he held a pencil in one hand and his pocket knife in the other.
Are you ready? Clark asked. I think so. If you wonder what to do or say, just be quiet. People will think you're mysterious. I can do that. I hope they come, Clark said.
The bus stops for some kids a little up the highway, so when it sees me, it should stop.
Okay, Clark tweeted. Once you get on, I'll fly behind and find a spot near the school to hide while you're there. There are some really interesting metal things I can hang out with. Remember that flagpole?
The one in front of the school?
Yeah, that's the one. She seems sort of tall and standoffish, but I think if we spent some time together, we'd get along.
The yellow bus appeared around the curve. Instantly, Ozzy's heart began racing. He waved Clark away, and the bird flew into the trees. Standing up straight, Ozzy tried to look brave. The bus got closer, its engine thundering. Clenching his fists around his pencil and knife, Ozzy tried to calm his breathing. He looked expectantly as the bus approached, but it didn't even slow down, whizzing right on by. A blast of air pushed Ozzy backward, and he rocked slightly on his heels. He watched the yellow vehicle disappear into the distance and sighed a sigh of both relief and disappointment. Clark flitted back from the trees and landed on his head.
So, what happened? The bird asked.
Well, it didn't stop.
I saw that. Should we hike into town?
No way, Ozzy said. These shoes are killing me. Besides, it's more than 4 miles from here. By the time we got there, school would be half over.
Should we try again tomorrow?
I guess. Maybe I'll wave at the bus driver next time.
Ozzy took off his shoes and crossed the highway, stepping off the asphalt into the trees.
About 23 hours and 50 minutes later, he was back in the same spot, wearing the same clothes, standing the same way.
Clark was in the trees when the yellow bus popped up on the horizon and sped closer. Ozzy leaned forward and waved. The bus blew by without stopping. Clark glided in from the trees. "You probably should work on your wave. I've seen other people do it, and they look much less pathetic." Ozzy waved to see what it looked like. "Oh, boy," Clark said. "That's not going to make anyone stop."
"So what do we do?"
"First, we work on your wave. And I'll stand in the road so the bus has to stop," Ozzy suggested.
"Perfect."
Ozzy and Clark went back to the cloaked house to practice. Another 24 hours later, Ozzy stood on the highway. He was just as nervous as before, but now there was an added element of fear. If the bus decided not to stop, it could easily be the end of his quest. Ozzy stayed planted for 10 minutes in the middle of the road before any vehicle appeared. It wasn't the bus, though, so he stepped off the road. Once the car had passed, he returned to his spot. Half an hour later, only 2 more cars had passed by, and neither one was a bus.
"Maybe the bus driver hated your wave so much that he went a different way."
"Let's go home so I can change. We need to hike into town to figure this out." Ozzy returned to the cloaked house and changed into something more comfortable. Then, as he had done more often lately than he could count, he ran through the forest to Otter Rock. By the time he and Clark arrived, it was past noon. They hid in the trees on a ridge just east of the high school. The moment they arrived, they saw instantly that something was wrong.
"Where is everyone?"
The school was deserted. There were no cars in the parking lot or buses parked to the side.
"Don't they have school every day?"
Ozzy asked.
"I don't know.
The flagpole's still there."
"Maybe it's like Harry Potter. He had weekends and holidays off. I'm going into one of the shops on Main Street and ask them what day it is."
"Good for you. I'll stay right here and chat up the flagpole."
Ozzy made it to Main Street with no problem and, before he could talk himself out of what he was doing, dashed into the first business he saw, a jewelry store called Sparkles. A woman was standing inside behind a glass counter. Ozzy pushed on the door a little too hard and found himself half stumbling in. He stood up, trying to catch his breath, and noticed the woman was staring at his shoeless feet.
What day is it?"
Ozzy asked.
"Excuse me?" the woman said, more confused than bothered. "Is it a holiday today?"
The woman smiled.
"Not that I know of. It's Saturday, March 5th.
"And there's no school on Saturday?"
"No."
It was more information than Ozzy could have hoped for.
"Thank you."
Ozzy paused.
"That is what people say, right?"
The woman smiled again.
"If they're being polite."
"Well then, thank you," Ozzy said. As Ozzy left the shop, not looking where he was going, he ran into someone, falling backward onto his rear. He looked up and saw, backlit by the sun, a strange silhouette of a man wearing a pointed, floppy hat. The sun made it hard to see the man clearly.
"You okay?"
the man asked, reaching out to pull Ozzy up. Reluctantly, Ozzy reached out.
"I think so," he said as the man pulled him to his feet.
"Nice to know people still think," the man replied. "Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to move. I hate to think what the consequences might be if I'm not home by sunset."
The strange man seemed to be wearing some sort of bathrobe and shivered as he said sunset. He took off, striding away purposefully. Ozzy rubbed his eyes and watched as he disappeared. Then he ran back to where Clark was supposed to be hiding. After a brief search, he found him sitting in a tree about a block away.
"How's your flagpole?" Ozzy asked.
"I tried talking to her, but she was really pretty stiff personality-wise. Just a tall stick."
"What about you?"
Clark asked. Did you find someone to ask?
Yes, she kept staring at my feet.
You do have nice feet, but I think most people wear shoes when they're outside.
They also told me that it's Saturday, and there's no school on Saturday.
Just like your wizard book said.
And if there's no school on Saturday, then there's none on Sunday. So, I think we should return to the cloaked house and regroup. That way, I'll be ready for Monday.
The mechanical raven hopped down from the tree and sat on Ozzy's head.
Oh, I bumped into someone while I was coming out of the store. He was blocking the sidewalk, and I fell to the ground.
People are so bulky.
He was wearing a pointed hat, like a wizard, and he had on a robe of some sort.
The way some of you humans dress yourselves is embarrassing.
They hiked back to the cloaked house. When they got there, Ozzy ate the last pouch of dried apples and a 7-year-old can of creamed corn.
Chapter 10. I'll get off here. Monday morning took far more courage than Ozzy had thought he would need to leave the cloaked house and hike to the highway.
You can do this, Clark kept encouraging him. Just think, you'll get on the bus, go to school, find Siggy, and she'll help you find your parents. Boy meets bus meets girl meets parents.
I hope so, Ozzy replied. This time, the boy and the bird exited the trees farther up the road, near the spot where train tracks crossed the Mule Pole Highway. Ozzy had a plan. He had never seen a train there, but he had heard some from a distance on more than one occasion. Where the tracks crossed the road, the shoulders of the highway were long mounds of dirt that looked like giant fat snakes running parallel to the asphalt. Next to the tracks, there was a tall yellow tree and 2 railroad crossing signs that looked like big X's against the sky. The crossing signs were familiar because Clark had been sort of sweet on them for a while. Ozzy had made the trek out to the signs once or twice when it was nearly dark, and Clark was still trying to get the signs to talk to him. Clark tried not to make eye contact with them as Ozzy stood on the right side of the road next to the tracks.
"And you really think this will work?" Clark asked.
"I'm pretty sure buses have to stop before they cross the tracks, remember? We saw it happen with that one when you came to visit the signs. They even opened the door. I have no idea why. Maybe..."
Ozzy heard the bus coming.
"Get into the trees!
I'll be in that tall yellow-leafed one. I think I just saw a dove fly in there."
The bird flew off, and the boy stood there with his pencil in one hand and his knife in the other. The bus drew nearer. The sound of its engine gave Ozzy's heart fits and made him doubt every aspect and piece of the plan. It drew closer still. Ozzy wondered if there was enough time for him to throw up before it arrived. It got closer, and he heard it downshift and watched it decrease its speed. Ozzy discovered he hadn't breathed in a while and sucked in a lungful of air. The bus came to a complete stop just before the tracks. It snorted like a giant yellow beast, and then the driver opened the door to check for trains. Not waiting for permission, Ozzy stepped onto the bus and climbed up the metal stairs. The driver stared at the boy in disbelief. He leaned back in his seat and looked at Ozzy if he were a new responsibility that he didn't want.
"You can't bring that knife," was all he said.
Ozzy looked at the knife in his hand and tossed it back out the door before it closed. The bus driver motioned with his thumb for Ozzy to move back into the bus, and the vehicle began to move slowly. Ozzy Toffee had never thought his plan would work. Now he was on the bus and wasn't sure what to do next. There were rows and rows of empty seats. Only a handful of students were already on board. One student stared at him. One didn't even look up. One had headphones over his ears, and another was working on homework she should have completed over the weekend. A boy with dark blue eyes and the left side of his head shaved looked at Ozzy and what he was wearing.
"Nice clothes,"
the boy said, laughing. Thanks.
Who are you anyway?
Ozzy.
You live by the train tracks?
He asked. We just moved here.
Whatever, the boy said. I wasn't looking for a conversation.
Ozzy moved two rows down the aisle and took a seat on the right side of the bus. He looked out the window and saw a small black dot flying behind them. Nobody else talked to him the rest of the ride, and the bus filled up almost completely before it finally reached Otter Rock High. It took everything Ozzy had not to leap from the bus and run back home, but he knew if he ever wanted things to change in his life, he needed to go forward. The books he'd read told him that things happened when people acted on their own, so he shuffled into the school with everyone else and picked a random classroom to enter. He sat down at one of the desks and waited. Boys and girls, both louder than wolves and as interesting as spring, filed into the room and sat down where they wanted. The desks around Ozzy stayed empty. A bell rang and a man with more stomach than butt came into the room carrying a stack of folders and looking as bothered as most people did at the end of a hard day.
Quiet! No talking!
He set the folders on his desk and began to write on the whiteboard at the front of the room. He talked as he scribbled.
Now, there's no time to hear all the wonderful things you did to improve the world this weekend. I'm sure all of you stepped outside of yourselves and did something of value.
He finished writing and turned around to face the class.
Oh, wait. You're teenagers. You probably spent the weekend staring at your phones.
None of the students made a noise.
Regardless, you were to put down your phones and read the fourth and fifth chapter of Animal Farm. Who'd like to give us their thoughts?
Nobody raised their hands, so Ozzy decided he'd give it a go. Animal Farm had been in one of his parents' boxes, and he'd read it a couple of times so far. The teacher saw Ozzy and stared sternly at him.
Who are you?
A few of the other students laughed, happy to have their teacher talking about something else. I'm Ozzy Toffee.
And you're new here?
Ozzy nodded.
Fine. The office never tells me anything. So, you're new and the only one who's read the assignment? Perfect. Well, tell me what you thought.
I think the book believes it's more important than it really is. The teacher looked stunned.
Really?
It had a few words I didn't understand, which was good, but the rest of the writing was sort of unpleasant.
Yes, well, that's because it's a classic. Who else has something to say?
And just like that, Ozzy was a student at Otter Rock High School. The teacher didn't seem to be interested enough to find out who he was or why he was there. When class was over, he followed a couple students to another room. The next class was almost the same as the first, and the third was worse. The teacher just asked him his name, wrote it down, and never addressed him again. Ozzy was tall enough that no boys wanted to mess with him, and quiet enough that the girls were left to imagine what he was really like. The way he was dressed made him odd enough to be ignored. Regardless, he loved what was happening. People were doing things and interacting. A girl lent another girl a pencil. Two boys argued over the score of a sporting event. A couple of kids stared at him, and one girl asked him if he was an exchange student. Exchanged for what?
You know, a different country.
No.
Then why are you dressed like that?
At lunchtime, Ozzy followed the herd to the cafeteria, where he mimicked them by getting in line and grabbing a tray for food. He saw three women putting delicious, warm-looking things on plates and handing the plates to the students. One handed a plate of hot mashed potatoes and turkey to Ozzy. This is mine? He asked.
Unless you don't want it, the woman replied.
Oh, I want it. Ozzy was gleeful about having a full plate of real food.
That's great,
she said, thinking his enthusiasm was sarcasm.
Happy to hear it meets your needs. Give the attendant your number.
Down the line, there was a row of plates with cake,
cups of jello and corn in little round dishes, then cartons of milk and juice. He took one of each as he slid his orange tray towards the cashier. He listened as student after student told the cashier a number and then walked off with their food. The boy in front of him said, 25-27.
Thank you, the woman said. Next?
25-28? Ozzy asked.
Thank you. Next?
Ozzy picked up his tray in disbelief. What he didn't know was that 3 weeks before, a student named Emily Reardon had moved to Idaho, and when she'd left Otter Rock High, she'd also left a balance of $31 in her lunch account. It was by luck alone that Ozzy had said her number. He found a long table half filled with students and sat down at the empty end. The table was next to the back wall of the cafeteria near the windows. As much as he might have enjoyed the company of friends, he was too enthralled with the food in front of him to care. He'd never had food before that wasn't canned or freeze-dried or straight from his garden. He had eaten a lot of fish, but the school turkey tasted like something out of a celebration at Hogwarts, and the warm potatoes and gravy seemed like spoils that only the wealthiest in the world could ever afford. By the time he got to the fruit punch, his mind was properly blown. He drank every drop, and upon completion, let out a terrific and grateful, "Ah!" The kids at the other half of the table stared at him.
"What's your problem?" a red-headed boy asked.
"Have you tasted this stuff?" Ozzy asked. Everyone laughed. Ozzy didn't know enough to be embarrassed. He cracked open a chocolate milk and, after a small sample sip, downed that as well. It was so much more enjoyable than the powdered milk he'd mixed with water all these years. He laughed after finishing it off.
"Dude, you're messed up,"
a boy sitting near the redhead said. "Am I drinking it wrong?"
"And what's up with your finger?"
Ozzy held up his hand and looked at his birthmark.
"That's wrecked," the redhead said.
Everyone laughed again, and then they got up and left.
"I don't think they like you. Yet."
Ozzy looked down. Clark was standing next to him on the edge of his bench.
"What are you doing here?"
Ozzy whispered.
"It's boring out there. The flagpole's a bust, and I was perched up in that window and saw you blowing it. I thought I could help, seeing as how I'm pretty good with the opposite sex. Or alloy."
Ozzy scooped up Clark and hit him under the table.
"I'm doing just fine on my own," Ozzy said defensively.
"Well, everyone just got up to get away from you."
"It doesn't matter. They give you food here. All I had to do was say a number."
"Well, the food looks too soft and there's no texture, but your fork isn't unattractive. Maybe you could bring it home."
"I'm pretty sure it belongs to the school."
"That's too bad. Have you found your parents?"
"Did you think it would be that easy? I can't just go around asking people if they happen to know about two grown-ups who were abducted years ago. That would be weird."
"Are you talking to yourself?" someone asked. Ozzy shoved Clark under the table and looked up. There, standing across the table from him, looking every bit as mystifying as she had the day at the beach over a year ago, was Siggy. Her dark, curly hair was longer, and she was older in the way that a person should be. Her brown skin stood out against the dull walls, and she had a smile that didn't match the mood of the room. Siggy's eyes were so deep, Ozzy needed new words to properly describe them.
"I mean, if this table is reserved for you and your invisible friends," Siggy said, "I can always go away."
"No, no,"
Ozzy stammered, still not believing his eyes. "I don't have any friends."
"Interesting. Not really something most people admit. I'm Siggy, by the way."
Siggy took a seat on the long bench right next to Ozzy. It appeared that she didn't remember Ozzy from their beach encounter. As she sat down, Clark crawled inside Ozzy's pants pocket. Hoping to motivate him, he bit down hard on his leg with the tip of his metal beak.
Yah!
Siggy slid back a few inches and stared for a moment. Again, she said, not a normal reaction to someone sitting down by you. What's your name?
Ozzy swallowed as if there were food in his mouth.
Ozzy.
That's all right.
What's your last name?
That's the last one I had. Actually, it's the only one I've had.
Siggy smiled, showing more patience and compassion than most high schoolers.
Right, she said. I mean, do you have a name that comes after it?
Oh, yeah. Toffee.
Ozzy executed the kind of nervous smile someone might display if they were holding a bomb but still trying to be polite.
Should I leave? She asked.
No!
Good. Then I'll eat my food right here.
Thanks.
Siggy smiled again.
You know, your name sounds like an 80s dance move or a cooking technique. Ozzy Toffee.
I don't really know how to dance or cook. Siggy took a bite of a small sandwich on her tray.
You're new here, aren't you?
Ozzy nodded.
I'm always glad when new students come. I've lived my whole life in Otter Rock, and to be honest with you, I find most people around here played out and boring. Are you a sophomore?
They said I was.
That's an odd way to say that.
Siggy smiled.
But I'm a sophomore too. How long have you been here?
I moved here recently, but my family has vacationed on and off here in the summers, Ozzy answered, reciting the story he and Clark had planned. We're going to be here for a while now.
Siggy looked okay with his answer.
Hopefully we move before I'm played out, Ozzy said, making his first real attempt at a joke with another human being.
Yes, hopefully. There's nothing more dreadful than running your course to the point where no one cares anymore.
I'll use my words sparingly.
Siggy actually laughed. Can I ask you something, Ozzy?
Of course.
Of course? I like that. Why are you so dressed up?
Ozzy looked down at himself. He glanced at his sleeves and his pants, and then finally at his shoes. I wasn't sure how people dressed here.
Well, they don't dress like that, Siggy said. You're lucky you're tall and good-looking, because even I'm tempted to make fun of what you're wearing.
This is wrong? Ozzy asked while trying to stare at himself.
It's not a totally bad thing, it's just different. I mean, it's not like I always fit in, but you don't seem to want to match at all.
Okay, tomorrow I'll wear a t-shirt and shorts.
There's a cool clothing shop off Main Street. They sell all kinds of cool clothes that most people here wouldn't bother with. I think you'd like it.
Ozzy kept quiet.
What's it called?
Clark said from the pocket and mimicking Ozzy's voice as best as he could. Siggy looked up from her sandwich.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Ozzy cleared his throat.
What's it called?
Zell's. Not that you have to go there, but you seem interesting enough to shop there. Is that a birthmark on your finger?
Ozzy nodded.
Very cool. It makes my hands look boring.
Ozzy thought her hands looked just fine, but he liked the compliment. Siggy finished her sandwich.
So what's your next class? She asked.
Having no idea, Ozzy asked her.
What's yours?
Chemistry with Ball.
I have the same.
Siggy took a drink of her white milk.
You know, they have that in brown,
Ozzy told her.
And it's amazing. You're an interesting guy, Ozzy.
A tall boy with spiky hair and a group of friends called out to Siggy from across the cafeteria.
I gotta go, Ozzy, she said. See you in chem.
Okay, that's okay. You go and I'll stay. And then I'll see you in that thing you just said.
Ozzy wanted to stop, but the words just kept coming out.
You know, that ball class where I guess we'll learn and listen and whatever.
Siggy was standing now.
You're quite a poet, Ozzy.
She smiled one last time and walked off,
That could have gone better,
Clark whispered from Ozzy's pocket.
In fact, I'm not sure if it could have gone worse. Maybe she'll feel sorry for you and fall in love with you that way.
I've never talked to people before, Ozzy said defensively.
Well, I hope you improve quickly.
Ozzy gathered his tray and dumped the garbage, then took the rest of the lunch period to randomly ask kids what room chemistry with Ball was in. By the time he figured it out, the bell had rung, and he was 5 minutes late. He took the only vacant desk left, 4 rows back and 5 rows over from Siggy. From the tapes of Dr. Emmett Toffee, subject number 2. Tom. Paris was unseasonably warm. Tom stopped at the souvenir store with his family and questioned the shopkeeper about a snow globe. Is this the best one you have? The very best. What about that one? Tom asked, pointing to a large snow globe on the shelf behind the man. A detailed sculpture of the Eiffel Tower was inside the globe, surrounded by ornately carved flowers. That's even better.
Better than the best, Tom said happily.
And how much? The snow globe cost more than a night in their hotel, but it was a piece of art. And as a collector of globes, Tom had to have it. It took a little bit of haggling with his wife, but then she consented and happily watched him purchase it. Tom held the snow globe so his family could admire it. Just beautiful, his wife said. Tom had a vast collection of snow globes back home. He had collected them since he was a child, and this globe was by far the finest. You need to wrap it up, his wife said. We'll take it back to the hotel and put it in the safe. Tom smiled at his family and then walked across the street, where 2 policemen were standing. Without warning, he threw the globe down at their feet, shattering it in a tremendous burst of water and glass. The 2 officers threw Tom to the ground immediately and handcuffed him as everyone around screamed and ran for cover. Tom was taken to the police station and questioned for hours. He had no history of mania or vandalism. He was the president of a small company in Florida, and aside from 1 parking ticket he'd paid at age 16, his record was clean. The strange thing was that he had no idea why he'd done it. In fact, he couldn't remember a thing about it. He was given a ticket, charged a fine, and asked to leave the country. Chapter 11. Fortunate Like You. For the next week and a half, Ozzy got up, hiked 2 miles to the Mule Pole Highway, and stood by the railroad tracks every weekday. When the bus stopped and Mr. Guta, the driver, opened its doors to check for oncoming trains, he'd hop on. At the end of the day, he would get on bus number 1015 and hop off when it stopped at the tracks again. He went to the same classes he had attended the first day and turned in homework and took tests. Teachers treated him just like they treated everyone else. Nobody bothered him because he was tall, strong, and kept to himself. And nobody talked to him because he was tall, strong, and kept to himself. Some days, Clark would wait for Ozzy near the train tracks. But most days, he would stow away in the front pocket of Ozzy's pants and attend school with him. Today was a stowaway day. Ozzy had spent as much time as he could in the school library using the computers. At first, the machines had blown his mind, but now he knew what they could do and how they could help him find his parents. There is very little information online about Emmett and Mia Toffee, just a few newspaper articles about his father and mother teaching in New York. One link took him to a picture of both of them at a banquet, where they were given an award for achievement in scientific studies. The lack of information made Ozzy uneasy. Ozzy also didn't enjoy the lack of Siggy. Since their first conversation, they hadn't talked much at all. A couple waves in the hall, 6 nods, and 5 or 6 smiles. The lunch bell rang while Ozzy was in the library. He logged out of the computer and headed to his locker. The school hadn't actually assigned him one, but he'd taken over an empty locker in a corner by the stairs. He'd even found a padlock at home and brought it to use.
"Anything else on your parents?" Clark asked from Ozzy's pocket. "Nothing. I think we need help." "I'm pretty sure we do."
Ozzy opened his locker, put his stuff in, then made his way to the cafeteria. Once there, he grabbed a tray and loaded it up. Then, as he'd done every day so far, he gave the woman his number. 2528.
"Your account is out of money," the woman said.
"What?" Ozzy asked.
"No money. You need to put more in your account."
"How?"
"Really?" the woman said, disgusted. "Have your parent or guardian give you some money, or they can come here themselves and pay the office."
"Money?"
"Just leave your tray here and take this."
The woman handed Ozzy a brown paper sack.
"It's free today, but not tomorrow."
Ozzy took the bag and left the line. He retreated to his normal spot by the back wall and windows. At first, he was sad to lose what had been on the tray, but he was delighted to open up the bag and find a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, an apple, a bag of chips, and white milk. Clark wriggled out of his pocket.
"I could use some air."
"You don't breathe." "Still, that pocket's the worst. I know I can't smell, but I imagine it stinks in there." Ozzy set an open book on the table and looked down. It was the best way to talk to Clark at lunch without anyone else noticing.
"My food number doesn't work anymore."
"I heard that."
"Yeah, well, I need some money."
"What about that box you found in the basement?"
The box Clark was talking about was a square metal one Ozzy had discovered the other day. It had been hidden inside another box that was covered in piles of more boxes in the basement. There was a lock on the front, and whoever had taken his parents must not have seen it, because it looked like it was worth stealing. Plus, it had the word funds written on it. Ozzy had tried to pry it open, but with no success so far.
"There has to be money in there,"
Ozzy whispered.
"That's what I'm thinking. You could buy some lunch, or better clothes, or a series of assorted metal objects. Let's find out if there's money in it before we start dreaming."
After school, Ozzy took the bus home, hiked to the cloaked house, and headed straight to the cellar. There were no lights in the cellar, and the four small windows it did have were high and covered with so much outside growth and vegetation that they barely let in any light at all anymore. Ozzy grabbed a candle and struck a match. The room lit up, displaying his father's long metal work table and hundreds of boxes. Most of the basement boxes had contained food at one time, but empty boxes were still stacked all over, stealing room and blocking the view. The locked metal box was under two boxes in the corner. Ozzy pushed them off and lifted the large, heavy, square box up. He carried it upstairs and put it down on the kitchen table with a thunk.
"Have you ever found any other metal boxes here?"
Clark asked. "Well, the box you were in was... well, that's not metal, right?"
"I don't find it attractive, so... no."
"Then I haven't found any other metal boxes." Ozzy located a flathead screwdriver from one of the kitchen drawers and tried to pick the lock again.
"That's not going to work," Clark said. "Let me try."
Clark closed his beak and stuck the tip of it in the keyhole. His head twitched and his beak got stuck. Ozzy sighed, grabbed hold of Clark, and yanked him free. Ozzy pulled a hammer out of a kitchen drawer and proceeded to bang the life out of the lock on the front of the box.
"You're not even denting it. Where'd you learn to swing a hammer?" Clark said. "What if I lifted it up and dropped it from a great height?"
"You can't lift this."
"What if you lifted it, or better yet, what if you took it to the top of the tree behind the house and let it fall?"
Ozzy picked up the box and walked out the front door. The forest was lime green. The setting sun lit up the thin clouds and made everything hazy.
This is a good idea, Clark said. I can feel it. We need to know what's in there.
What if it's like Pandora's box?
It's not. This is reality, not Greek mythology.
I'm talking to a metal bird. Who's to say what's real or not?
Ozzy walked back behind the stream and climbed over the black mossy wall to get to the red alder tree that he liked so much. It was enormous. Ozzy had spent many days climbing and reading amongst its limbs. Clark flew straight up to the top as Ozzy pushed the square metal box up into the low branches. Slowly, he hefted and shoved the container higher and higher. The branches became thinner and the air lighter.
Hurry!
Clark yelled down from the top of the tree.
Why?
Ozzy yelled up.
I don't know. It just seems wrong to yell slower. How about keeping quiet then?
Clark didn't reply. It took a few stops to rest and some clever cramming to get the box through the branches, but eventually Ozzy reached the top. He looked out and observed the low clouds surrounding the house and forest like a field of pulled cotton. Clark sat on a high branch, his beak clenched tight.
You can talk now, Ozzy said.
Thanks. Then let me just say, took you long enough, and push it hard. Ozzy positioned himself to best shove the square box out of the tree. Then, using his right leg and left arm, he kicked and pushed as hard as he could. The box dropped like a stone. He heard it falling through the branches and leaves, followed by a tremendous crack. From where he was sitting, he couldn't see the ground.
Do you think it opened? He asked.
Clark looked at him and shrugged his wings. Then he darted down out of the tree and back to the ground. In less than 30 seconds, he had flown back up to report his findings.
The box hit a big rock and it's busted open completely, but there was just a bunch of paper inside.
No clothes or money, or maybe some food?
Don't you think I would have said that? It's just paper.
Ozzy made his way back down the tree. Thanks to the school cafeteria, he'd eaten more amazing food in the last week than he had ever in his life. Still, he would have loved to discover something delicious in the box. He had hoped his dad had locked up something good, like chocolate or soda that didn't expire. So many of the boxes he had opened throughout his life had been filled with paper, so news of more was a terrible letdown. Ozzy jumped from the low branches onto the ground. He could see the broken box. He also saw what looked like a meadow of small, green pieces of paper.
That's money,
Ozzy said happily.
Really? Clark said. It looks like paper.
Well, it's paper money. Ozzy picked up a handful of $100 bills.
I wonder if it's still good?
You think it expires? Clark asked.
We could try some and see what happens.
You mean eat it?
No, take some to school and see if they'll give me more food.
Or, Clark said, hear me out. Tomorrow's Saturday, so you can take some and see if they'll let you trade it for clothes at that store Siggy told you about.
Ozzy gathered every last bill while Clark tweeted and hopped around excitedly. There was a lot of money, well over $50,000.
Ozzy carefully stacked it all and then hid it in the starry stairs.
Are we rich?
Clark asked as they looked at the money.
Maybe, Ozzy replied.
I feel snootier already.
Maybe I can pay someone to help me find my parents.
Still, you might want to change your clothes.
Ozzy closed the compartment and screwed the wooden ball back into the end of the newel post. Chapter 12. Well, I hate that it's come to this. The town of Otter Rock wasn't huge, but it had most of the things a town should have. There were restaurants and businesses, as well as a few nice neighborhoods.
Like the rest of the area, there were trees everywhere. It wasn't more than a mile from the seashore, so the smell of the ocean also filled the air. Otter Rock had a picturesque main street filled with nice stores where tourists could spend money on things that were suspiciously close to things they could probably just purchase at home. One of those stores was Zell's. As Ozzy stepped through the glass door, a small bell chimed. Clark was hidden in Ozzy's pants pocket. They had argued over whether or not he should come in, but in the end, Clark had won by pointing out that he had better style and could help with Ozzy's choices.
"Hello," a girl with pink hair and bare shoulders said. "How are you?"
"Hello," Ozzy replied.
"My name's Amy. Can I help you?"
"Your hair's pink."
"Intentionally," Amy said, adding a smile to her words.
"I like it. I didn't realize people's hair could be that color."
"Mine can. Of course, if I had naturally black hair like yours, I might prefer that. Who cuts your hair?"
"Me."
"Well, we can talk about that later."
She looked Ozzy up and down.
"Right now, you need some clothes."
"These clothes cost money, right?" The pink-haired girl frowned.
"Yes, they do, I'm sorry to say."
Ozzy took out a stack of $100 bills. "Do these work?" Amy smiled again. An hour later, Ozzy left Zell's with a whole new wardrobe and instructions on what he should wear and when. Amy had even called the salon down the street and set up an appointment for Ozzy to get his hair cut.
"I don't think you need your hair cut," Clark said as Ozzy walked. "I finally got it to be perfectly nest-like."
"Amy said it would make me look more polished."
"That does sound handsome. Just make sure they know you share your hair with a bird."
The salon was called Anthony's, and inside, Ozzy met a girl with silver hair named Allison. She gave Ozzy a haircut and washed his hair. It was the first time since his parents had been taken that someone had touched him. Lying back while warm water ran over his hair and Allison gave him a scalp massage was extremely okay and very relaxing.
"Don't fall asleep on me," Allison joked. "You need to be awake to see how amazing you'll look."
After the washing, Ozzy was taken back to the chair where she blow-dried his hair and then put sticky stuff into it. When she was done, she sold him some shampoo and a few other things that he absolutely needed to maintain his new look. As Ozzy stepped out of the salon, he felt like a different person. His life had changed so dramatically in the last short while. He had been alone forever, hidden up at the cloaked house, and now he walked freely on the streets of Otter Rock. When Ozzy turned down a side street, Clark flew up and landed on his head.
"Okay, this isn't bad,"
Clark said, kneading Ozzy's hair with his feet.
"I can work with this. It's a little sticky for my taste, but that will wear off. Actually, I'm supposed to put sticky stuff in it every day. Then I'm going to have to wash my talons more often. Where now?"
"I thought since our money works, we could go to a restaurant and you could watch me eat something."
"No, thanks. I'll stay in the trees."
Ozzy chose a Chinese restaurant, and although there weren't many customers, he thought the food was amazing. He expressed his opinion to his waitress, Tamara, at least 10 times, and then, still not having a great understanding about money and what was expected, he left a $100 tip for a $9 meal.
"Thank you," Tamara said.
"You're welcome." On his way out, Ozzy nearly tripped over a wire rack holding a stack of magazines near the register. The cover said, ORVG, Otter Rock Visitor's Guide, in large letters. On the bottom of the cover, in white letters, it said, "Free." Ozzy picked up the top magazine in the stack. He flipped it over and saw a large ad for the local police department on the back. There was a picture of an officer on it, smiling, his arms folded, and a list of phone numbers a person could call if they were in need of help. Ozzy flipped through the ORVG and then slipped it into one of his Zell's bags before leaving the restaurant. He crossed the street and headed north.
"That's a huge smile," Clark said as he drifted in and settled onto Ozzy's shoulder.
The food was just about perfect.
"You know, not to be that bird, but you getting dressed up and eating a bunch of food wasn't really that fun for me. Maybe we could find a metal something I could take home and gaze at. I saw a lamp post a few blocks over that I felt like I had a connection with."
"We can't take home a lamp post, but I'll see what we can do. First, however, I have something I need to look into."
"I bet it's not metal."
"No, but they wear metal badges."
"Then what are we waiting for?"
Ozzy continued to head north toward the other side of town. Chapter 13. Officer Friendly. The police station in Otter Rock was a square building made from cinder blocks with a pitched metal roof. It looked a little more imposing than welcoming, but Ozzy didn't let its appearance stop him from stepping through the front door. For some time now, Ozzy had thought about going to the police. Many of the novels his parents had left had been mysteries, and so he knew that there was a strong possibility that the police could help him find his parents. After all, his father and mother had been taken, and that was a crime that needed to be solved. He hadn't gone sooner because for years he hadn't even known there was a town nearby, and once he had discovered that there was, he was old enough to have read stories that made him suspicious of what the cops could or couldn't do. His parents, after all, had been stolen from him by adults, and the smiling cop on the back of the ORVG in his green uniform made Ozzy a little uneasy. Still, he needed to take a chance. With Clark tucked into his pocket, Ozzy tried to look confident as he strode up to the front counter. A woman with dark skin and short hair was busy doing something behind the counter. Her name tag said, "Wilma." Without looking up, Wilma said, "How can I help you?"
I was wondering, do you help people find people?"
"We do. Are you missing someone?"
Wilma looked up and took a long glance at Ozzy's birthmark. Ozzy cleared his throat.
"Does it cost money?"
"No,"
she said, looking at his eyes.
"Now, who's missing?"
"My aunt and uncle used to live around here, and I was wondering if the police had any information."
"Let's have you talk to Officer Greg. Greg!"
A pudgy man with no facial hair and round ears rolled the chair he was sitting in about halfway out of an office behind Wilma's counter. He had on a full uniform and a shiny gold badge. Based on his expression, he was considerably less friendly than Wilma.
"Yes,"
Officer Greg said.
"This boy here needs some assistance."
Greg looked at Ozzy suspiciously. As he did so, the uncomfortable feeling began to grow in Ozzy's stomach.
"What can I help you with, son?"
"Yeah, I was just wondering if there was any information about my aunt and uncle. They moved here about 7 years ago."
"And they're missing?"
"Well, they haven't been seen for a long time."
Greg looked at Ozzy and sniffed.
"Why don't you come into my office?"
"That's okay. I was just wondering."
Ozzy began to back toward the door.
"Don't worry," Greg said. "Now come, leave your bags on the bench there."
Despite wanting to turn and run, Ozzy set his bags down on a bench in the waiting area and pushed through a half door at the side of the counter. He balled his hands into fists and followed Officer Greg. Once in the office, Greg pointed to a chair for Ozzy to sit in and then pulled out a pen from a drawer.
"First off, how long have they been gone?"
"About 7 years."
Greg sniffed.
"That's a long time. Are you sure you're telling the truth, or is this a joke?"
"No, it's not funny at all."
Has anyone ever tried to look for them?
Maybe.
Listen, kid, I don't know what you think we can do. Frankly, I'm not sure this isn't a gag.